Sorry.
And welcome to the December 19th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Thank you all. So let's start with time certain, item 1210.
Do you want to also read 1211?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Read them together. Okay. Sure.
1210, accept recommendations for a disabled parking program and direct Portland Bureau of Transportation to complete development of the program and implement new regulations effective July 1, 2014. Item 1211, extend the date of the privileges for regular disabled parking permits.
Commissioner Novick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So again, what we're doing here today is 1211 will extend our current policy on parking for people with disabled placards until July of next year. But with 1210, we would accept a series of recommendations that are fairly detailed, but which then PBOT would spend some time turning into a detailed program that we would enact next year. Right now, as you know, people with disabled placards they receive from the state can park all day for free at city metered spots. I think that that fact is something of an historical accident, stemming from, I suspect, people's belief at some point that, well, when you're talking about people with disabilities, you're talking about people in wheelchairs, and maybe they can't reach up and put coins into these tall meters. But it's an historical accident, which I doubt that if you'd asked people with disabilities as a community in a vacuum, they would have thought made a great deal of sense. I think that if you ask people with disabilities, are you entitled to free parking that other people pay for, I think most of them would say, well, no, but we are entitled to, we think, to some consideration, to some extra time to complete certain tasks, to some effort to make sure that we don't have to walk too far to get to a given destination. So what we have come up is a set of recommendations that we think addresses those real needs while ending the policy of free all-day parking. One issue we have with free all-day parking is that the purpose of these time-limited metered spots downtown is to create a certain degree of turnover in the downtown area and give a lot of people a chance to come downtown and do something that might take an hour or two, like shopping. What we find is that there's a fairly large number of placard holders who are parking all day downtown, and that reduces the number of spaces that are available for shopping. Now, as you'll hear in a few minutes, we actually are going to make provision for some people to continue to park all day downtown. But we suspect that the adoption of these proposals will result in reducing the number of people who do that and freeing up some space for shoppers. So what we are proposing to do, I'll rattle off some of the highlights. One is, right now we have hardly any spaces that are actually reserved in the downtown area for people with disabled placards. So we are going to reserve 30 of them for people who have the wheelchair placard, and we are going to reserve another 50 for people who have any kind of placard. And we're going to do some research and see if there are spaces where some people with disabilities tend to access services, where it's particularly important to have some of those spots. We are also going to provide that, although everybody needs to pay at a meter, with an exception I'll get to, people generally will need to pay at the meter whatever the meter allows you to pay. If you are at a spot that is an hour or 90 minutes or 2 hours, but you have a placard, you're allowed to stay for a total of 3 hours. And that was a result of discussion with people in the Disabled Parking Task Force and the Disabilities Commission, who said, we need some extra time sometimes. And we had some back and forth, and we came out with 3 hours will be the time that everybody gets. So you pay for the 90 minutes or whatever the meter says, but then you get to stay until 3 hours is up. Now, by the way, in terms of having people with the placards pay something, this is consistent with what a number of other cities around the country are doing. A number of other cities around the country, like Arlington, Virginia, Washington, D.C., Raleigh, North Carolina, Oregon City, Oregon, have said, we're going to start having people with the placards pay. Something we're doing that I think, I'm not sure I've seen a precedent for, is we suspect that a large number of people who are parking with the placards are commuters who work downtown. And we thought that there could well be that there's a fair number of those people who don't have a garage space provided by an employer, might not be next to a smart park or other downtown garage, and for whatever reason can't practically use TriMet. So what we decided we would do is establish a permit for people in that category to pay a monthly fee, which would be equivalent to what you'd pay for a garage in that area, and to park on the street. So basically, if you come to us and say, here's, I work downtown, here's why I can't use TriMet, don't have access to a garage, we'll essentially sell you a ticket in what's sort of a floating garage. That, I think, will be unique to Portland. It'll be interesting to see how many people take advantage of that, and that might set a precedent for other jurisdictions. We decided to do something, and by the way, that means two things. One, it means you don't have to be, if you've got that permit, you don't have to be running back to your car to fill the meter. It also would be a significant discount from if you simply paid the metered amount all day long. I think that on a monthly basis, if you had to fill the meter at $1.60 an hour for your entire workday, your whole work month, I think that would be something like $270. A monthly space at a downtown garage tends to be in the 170 range. We decided to make the same provision for people who live downtown and, again, don't have access to parking of their own. They, too, will be able to buy floating garage spaces. We also decided that we're going to make a special provision for people who live in subsidized housing downtown. And obviously, by virtue of that, they're very income limited. And we decided that for at least until 2015, we would allow those people to give them a special permit, allow them to continue to park for free while we do some research into how many such people there are and what their circumstances are. And Nicole Sharon with ONI, I think, should focus particularly on that aspect, and she'll give it a better explanation of what exactly we have in mind. So those would be the major elements of our plan. And we're pleased that we've had the endorsement of the Disabled Parking Task Force, many of whom have worked on these issues for a number of years, and we really appreciate their dedication and their creativity, and the endorsement of the Commission on Disabilities. And again, we really appreciate their attention and their commitment and their creativity. And we also appreciate the investment of the Portland Business Association, which has an interest in this, and I think they have a representative here today. And with that, I think I'll turn it over to Sarah Schooley from PBOT.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Schooley. I work in the Parking Operations Division over at the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and we'll kind of walk you through the program this afternoon. I think Commissioner Novick did a really good job of giving you a broad overview of the different parts of the program that I'm sure many of you know about. But I'll go into a little more detail about the different parts of the program and kind of why we developed those parts as they are. So one thing that I really want to repeat that Commissioner Novick said is kind of the endorsements that we've gotten from the Disabled Parking Task Force and the Portland Commission on Disability, and also the knowledge that we gained from them in putting together this proposal. It's been a long process. The task force has been meeting for about 5 years. So it's really exciting to come to something that they feel comfortable endorsing and going forward with. I also want to provide a little context about why we're doing this now and what other regulations we're falling under. So a big part of the reason why we even have to think about putting together a disabled parking program is because of state law. So as some of you may know, the disabled parking placards are actually a state of Oregon thing. We don't have much discretion as to who does or does not get a placard. That's all through the Oregon DMV. But what we do have regulation over is the privileges that can be given to those with placards. So in 2007, there was an Oregon revised statute, 811.635. That's also widely known as Senate Bill 716. That's how it's referred to mostly around here. And it was passed by the state, and it separated disabled parking privileges into two categories depending on the type of placard. So there's wheelchair placards, and then there's non-wheelchair placards. And what the Senate Bill 716 did is it kind of removed all flexibility in what a city could do or what a jurisdiction could do around wheelchair placards. And so if somebody has a wheelchair placard, the state mandates that they are allowed to park without payment and without time limit. So that is something that the city cannot do anything about. As for other disabled placards, the city...
Just to clarify, that's at any meter, right? Not just at the 50 set aside.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct. That's any meter. And then as for non-wheelchair placards, the state gives jurisdictions the ability to decide what privileges to give those placards. And so as we go through the program today, you'll see that distinction, that what we're really applying the program to is the non-wheelchair placards. I think that's a really important clarifying point for the community and for the council to know. The other part of why we're going forward with the proposal today is actually a timeline issue more than anything. And so when Senate Bill 716 passed in 2007, the cities kind of were given this permission to create something if they wanted for disabled placards. As a city, what we continued to do was extend our pre-Senate Bill 716 privileges. And our current extension expires December 31st of this year. And so we were put in a spot of either re-extending those privileges or of creating a program. And so that's really what created the timeline and the urgency in putting the program together now. So with that, I'm going to jump into the program and really want to reemphasize that this was helped in being put together by the Disabled Parking Task Force and PCOD. Okay, so there's two parts of the presentation and kind of the package that you're getting today. First is a resolution. And so this resolution is to accept the program recommendations and direct PBOT to develop and implement the program starting in July. The second part is to extend the current policy through June 30th. And Commissioner Novick talked a little bit about this, and that those 6 months beginning next year will give PBOT the ability to put together this program after kind of getting your approval and your comments about the program. And that those 6 months also gives us time as a bureau to do more outreach. We have done some outreach, mostly through PCOD and the Disabled Parking Task Force, but we really like to do a lot more and want to make sure that the council is on board before we go out too much with a program. So the next thing I want to show you, just for clarification purposes, once again, is where this program would apply. So we're only talking about metered areas. And so this map shows the different metered areas. We have the downtown, west side, kind of central downtown area, the Lloyd District. We have a couple streets, a couple blocks in central east side that are now metered. And then we have an area up at OHSU that has meters. And so this program would only be applying to these metered areas.
What's the red line in this map?
Oh, the red lines are the highways. Yeah, so the purple lines are what you're looking at. So what's within the purple areas are the metered spaces. And it's also important as we look at the part of the cities that are metered, what the purpose was of us putting meters there. And so just a little language from our transportation system plan is when we talk about putting in meters, what we're looking for is creating an on-street parking system that's managed to support economic vitality by encouraging parking turnover, improving circulation, encouraging use of off-street parking, maintaining air quality, and promoting the use of alternative modes. And so what we're really looking at those areas within the purple lines is creating short-term turnover parking. And as Commissioner Novick said, the current use of many disabled placards is limiting the ability for folks to have that short-term commercial parking.
What's the area, detached area in the bottom left corner?
That's OHSU.
Oh, right.
Yep. There's just a couple meters up there.
Oh, there's quite a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so this next slide shows, the problem that I think as a bureau, we have a lot of problems that come to us, and we really look at, what's the problem before we try to solve it. We need to know what the problem is. And this map really shows us some different components of the problem. So the map with the colors on it, that was from a survey that was done this past September. And what our parking enforcement staff did is they just walked the blocks like they normally do and counted the number of placards that were displayed in vehicles on those streets. And as you can see in the darker areas, there were some areas, particularly these downtown blocks actually surrounding City Hall, that were in the 30 percentile range. So almost one in three spaces were taken up by somebody with a disabled placard, some which may be short-term parkers, but what a lot of our parking enforcement see is more longer-term or commuter parking. And so we have that really strong density of disabled placards in the central city, and then in other areas of the city it's less, but it's still a pretty significant number that may be limiting accessibility for those that need short-term parking, and also limiting accessibility that for those that really need that front row parking that we would want a disabled parking program to support. There's some call-outs here on this slide that I think are important for setting some context. One is the kind of pop-out bubble that's surrounded in blue, and that looks at the placard history. And so these numbers are the numbers we have from when we started doing the counts, which kind of are aligned with when Senate Bill 716 was passed in 2007. Our first count in 2007, we saw about 600 placards on the street. And in September of this year, we saw over 1,000. And so that number of placards is growing tremendously. Well, we assume it's also the number of placards, but even if it's not the number of placards out there, the use of placards is growing downtown at a very significant rate. And these are total placards, and so this is the number for both normal disabled placards and wheelchair placards. The table at the bottom shows the difference between the number of non-wheelchair placards and wheelchair placards. And so you can see the big difference there in that there's only 21 wheelchair placards that we saw on the street, but over 1,000 placards total. So those wheelchair placards are a very small portion, and we'll talk about how we're going to continue to provide accessibility or improve providing accessibility for the wheelchair placard users.
Sarah, can I? Yes. I have a pet peeve as my eyesight keeps deteriorating.
Yes.
And what you're directing us to on the screen, I have a fighting chance. Although Dan and I are both struggling, but at least
that makes at least three of us.
It's blown up. But the other thing I was going to ask, and we ask this of all the bureaus. When you give us the backup PowerPoint, and a lot of bureaus don't, so thank you for giving us this because we get to make notes on it. My request in the future is if you could blow up the pictures on the backup.
Right.
Because even if we did it, I know it's a waste, it might violate our paper policy, but if you could go ahead and blow it up as big as you can so that people like me can read it, if you wouldn't
right.
mind.
Right. And I have
my
a
apologies,
couple.
Commissioner.
Oh, I'm just thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That'll help us. And I had one question off of this slide. When you did your surveys of placards, this doesn't tell us whether does this data tell us whether the person works in the area or is visiting, or it's just that there was a car with a. It's just a point in time.
It's just a point in time. So it's just that there's a placard being used, and with the different types of placards, the only difference that you can visually see in placards is between wheelchair and non-wheelchair, and actually the main difference is that they're a different shade of blue. So you have probably seen both of them on the street, but can't tell the difference. The icon, the decal is exactly the same on them, so it's just that shade of blue.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I'm going to start diving into some of the details of the program, but as I go through the different parts of it, I really want you to continue to focus on the changing objectives of our disabled parking program. As Commissioner Novick mentioned before, the the first kind of wave of how can we provide accessibility for those with disabled placards came around cost. And so we were really looking at free being the key to accessibility. What we've seen from, you know, the use, the very high rate of use on street, is that free actually isn't providing that spatial and that locational accessibility that we were hoping for. That a lot of those blocks, a lot of those places that people need to get to are actually blocked off most of the day by those with disabled placards, so others with mobility issues often can't get that front row service that they might need in that front row accessibility. So we're really switching our strategy from free being the main point of any program to how can we get the location to be the priority of our program. So as we go through the different parts, hopefully I'll be able to explain how we've made that transition with the different parts of our program. So first I'm going to start with the wheelchair placard holders. How Commissioner Novick described the program, we have some categories of users that we're talking about here. And as I go through the different parts of this program, I think it's important to note that these categories aren't exclusive of each other. So folks might see themselves falling into more than one of these categories. And if so, we encourage the person to figure out which either individual or multiple categories apply to them, and they can kind of choose which piece to use when they feel that it's appropriate. And they were also a way for the city staff and the task force to identify who are the users of our downtown parking system and what would we need to do to make the parking system and downtown accessible to them. So this first category that we looked at were the wheelchair placard holders. As I mentioned before, Senate Bill 716 prohibits the city from allowing, or from, I guess, you know, if somebody wanted to pay, they can always pay the meter, but from mandating that they pay or that there's a time limit in metered areas. But what we are doing here is we're looking to add at least 30 on-street designated wheelchair placard parking spaces. Commissioner Novick alluded to the fact that there's very few disabled parking spaces in the meter district. There are about 5. So very small number of spaces reserved for those with disabled placards. When we're talking about wheelchair placard holders, oftentimes they have some more restrictions as to what is a convenient place to be parking. And so by designating spaces, we can get those spaces that work best for wheelchair vans and for accessible vehicles. So those spaces would usually be on the right side of the road and then at the front or the end of the block to allow that access to a curb ramp. So we would, the number 30, that really came from the 21 that we saw when we did the survey. So we bumped up that number of spaces. I could see this number changing because the privileges of the different placards are going to be changing. So some folks out there who have a non-wheelchair placard might go to get their wheelchair placard when the program becomes instituted. So we can always change that number 30, but we were just going to start there.
How would, let's say, someone visiting Portland who isn't a regular commuter, how would they learn where the dedicated parking is? And is there some best practice in how it's branded?
Right. So I don't know of any best practices. The signs do look different. And so there is different signage for wheelchair placard only parking versus disabled placard only signage. And so there would be the visual signage there. I think as far as general communications, whether it be something on the city's website saying this is where the spaces are, we haven't delved into that, but that's definitely a possibility as we move forward.
Do we have a plan for how we're going to advertise the rest of the program to out-of-town visitors?
We're looking, that's what's going to be happening in these next 6 months, that we've really tried to get the word out through the task force and through the Commission on Disabilities, but part of the reason for that 6 months is figuring out our best communication. Okay, so this part really is the wheelchair part of the program, the wheelchair placard holders part of the program, because as I said before, they were set as a distinct group by Senate Bill 716. So these next sections I'm going to go over apply to non-wheelchair placard holders. And we have a couple different components of this program. One that Commissioner Novick alluded to is this parking for 3 hours or less. And so in the discussions that we had with the task force, a big part of it was looking at our downtown meters and saying, you know, if we have to pay those meters, it's just not enough time for us to complete our errands or do whatever we need to do downtown. And just as a little reference, most of downtown, and I'll actually go on to the next map, that most of downtown is under 3 hours. So as you look at, you know, this map, the green and the yellow are the 1 hour and 90 minutes, and then the 3 hour is the blue. And so you can see most of downtown is covered in those hours. And so if somebody, for example, really wanted to be here around City Hall, they would have to go a couple blocks away before they found that 3 hour meter. And so what the task force recommended is that 3 hours is a pretty good time period for somebody to complete a shorter errand that they would probably be completing if they came to this area of downtown. So what we're proposing is that in a meter that is 3 hours or less, the individual would be able to pay the meter for the maximum time allowed and then be able to stay over that maximum time up to 3 hours. If that individual was parking at a 90-minute meter and they only wanted to stay for 1 hour, they would only have to pay for 1 hour. But if they wanted to stay over the time limit allowed by the meter, they would be paying the maximum.
You could pay for six. So you could pay for 3 hours and stay 6 hours?
No. So you pay the maximum that the meter allows. And so you're talking about the 3 hour meters.
Right.
So it's up to 3 hours.
So if you park at a 3 hour meter, then that's the maximum you can stay.
Yes, okay. That's correct. And so if you look on this map, you can also see that there are some black lines and also some purpley red lines, and those are 5 hour meters and 11 hour meters. Right. So with those meters, you would pay for the amount that you were actually staying for.
Sure. Since you have this map up, can I just pose a question that is not directly germane to this, but come back to it at some
please.
Point? Please. Because as we were getting up to speed on these issues, we had someone come to us and raise another issue that's actually pretty interesting, which is how we deal with the situation downtown of people who are coming downtown at the end of the workday to come to a meeting. So they're coming to a community meeting or a council mm-hmm. meeting or whatever, and they come and park at 5. And as your chart shows, even in areas where you have to pay only until 7, the bulk of the downtown is either 1 hour or 90 minutes.
Correct.
And so the question came up, is there some way for us to do variable pricing so that someone who comes and parks at 5 at the end of the day, who's clearly coming for an after-hours meeting, could get the benefit of paying through 7 so mm-hmm. they didn't have to feed the meter in the middle of that meeting? And I don't know what the data is on how many people fall into that category, but someone raised it, and I thought it was an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. I mean, right now our meters are set up to, you know, there's a specific amount of time in them. You can only pay that time. But I think that, I mean, as we go out to buy new meters, of course, the old ones will be in place for a while. I mean, one answer to that I think might be, for some people at least, technology, where we can allow people to pay for a more extended period of time through their phone or through these other gizmos that Sarah's going to talk about in a little bit.
And I just think, because, as you mentioned, the part of the principle here is to get turnover, mm-hmm. and we want to encourage that, it's like after 5 o'clock, there might be a different equation. And for that person who's coming to attend a meeting and would otherwise have to feed the meter, if there was flexibility, allowed them to get max out to 7
right.
and not have to feed the meter, I'd be interested in knowing whether that's possible and what the pros and cons are.
Yeah. That is, so just as a little side note, that is possible through programming. But, yeah, it's not necessarily part of this issue, but there are cities that do that with their meters.
But to clarify, is the current policy that you are allowed to feed your meter and stay longer than
no.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so you're not currently allowed to feed the meter.
No, so that's the problem. You're in the middle. You've come downtown to go to City Hall for an after-hours meeting. You've fed the machine. You have to come out. You have
but
to get
the point
in
is you're not supposed to stay in that spot.
No, I understand. Right. But that's my point. You have to get in your car, move a foot, and then feed the meter again. And all I'm saying is for that, those are not people who are trying to game the system. They're people that have other reasons to come downtown than shopping or whatever. So I'm not trying to get the council to support this idea. I would just like to know more about it. I understand I have at least one no vote, but I'd be interested in learning more.
We can follow up with you on that.
I think it's just important for people to know the rules, having got a ticket for moving on a one block face in a two-hour, you know, those the two-hour permit meters?
Yes.
Moved the car just as I thought I was supposed to, but it turned out it was on the same block face, so it didn't count, and I just
Commissioner Fritz,
sure.
If this is helpful, not only do you have to move your car, but it turns out you have to put the sticker on the sidewalk side, not the other side.
I knew that one.
That one I just want to
and that actually is very important, because if people put it on the driver's side, that means that the meter officers have to walk out into the street, and that's dangerous.
Safety,
so that's actually a reason for that.
Learning all sorts of stuff from you today. So I'm going to draw you back into this map. I'm looking at the time limits, and the difference I want you to see here is kind of what would happen with this three-hour limit. And so right now, you know, we have this splash of different colors downtown looking at the different time limits. And what that would turn to is kind of this map, where the green is the up to 3 hours. So what it does basically is make the whole downtown at least 3 hours. And we feel like this, with the support of the commission and the task force, is adequate time in most cases for folks to do what they need to do downtown. But as we know, there's always folks that this won't meet their needs. And so we have a couple of other options for them, which I'll go into next. So the first part, or the second part of the, you know, what options do we have for all disabled placard holders is to allow parking for over 3 hours. So currently, with our meter programming limitations, we aren't necessarily able to do this sort of programming at the meters, but there are alternative payment technologies that would allow us to do this. So one is pay by cell, which some cities here in the States and also Vancouver, BC has, where you pay using a cell phone application or by calling in. But another one that would probably be more quick to implement are in-vehicle meters. So there's a picture of an in-vehicle meter on this slide. It's the little yellow kitchen timer looking thing. And basically what it is, it's a little plastic card, a little plastic machine that you can either put on your dashboard or hang in the window, and it allows you to pre-charge it. And so you can charge it online. You just put, you know, pay for the amount of money. When you put it in the car and you leave the car, you press start. When you come back, you press stop. And then that charges you for the amount of time that that vehicle was parked. And so what parking enforcement would do is they would see that there was a valid disabled placard hanging in the car and that the in-vehicle meter was running. And if those two things are shown together, then it would show that the person was paying for the time that they were parked. The key to the in-vehicle meters is that we wouldn't necessarily set a time limit. So if somebody needed to park for 5 hours, they could, using one of these in-vehicle meters. That all we would have to see is that it was still running. But that encouragement and that incentive for turnover would be that if the meter's running, the person is paying. And so they still have that incentive to have short-term parking if they can, but they have that allowance if they need it to park longer during the day. And then the last part here is the 50 designated spaces. This goes back to the same principle that I talked about with the wheelchair spaces, in that we're really trying to transfer from free to location, and that front row seat when talking about accessibility. And so we're looking right now is at putting up 50 designated spaces for disabled placard users. Once again, this number is variable. It can go up if we find that there's more need for it. But right now, we'd be looking at starting with 50 of these designated spaces. A key part, just so that there's no confusion on these spaces, is if you were using them with a non-wheelchair placard, you would still need to pay. It just allows you location preference that those without a placard would not be able to get. So I'm going to dive into two other groups of those that would have non-wheelchair placards, one being employees and one being residents. And so with employees within the meter district, what we propose is that there's an employee permit. And so as Commissioner Novick specified, we realized that if somebody was to pay the meter on street for 8 to 9 hours a day, that it would be more expensive, or it would be more expensive, that's correct, than parking in a garage or lot. And really what we're encouraging people to do in order to stay with our Central City Parking Management Plan is that on-street parking is, for short term, we would really prefer that commuters end up in lots or garages if they can. And so what we're doing with this employee permit is we're allowing folks to park on street if they purchase a permit, but we're putting that financial incentive in place by making it comparable price-wise to lots or garages so that people do choose lots or garages if they can. And so once again, we're allowing that accessibility on street, but we're encouraging through the financial part, through the price, for people to go off street if possible.
So, I'm getting lost here. Under the employee permit, you would pay what you would pay at a garage.
Correct. And so we.
So how is that an incentive? I mean, I'd rather take a meter right in front of my office than park two blocks away in a smart park garage.
Right.
How is that an incentive for me to keep these parking spots not being tied up all day by employees?
Right. Well, part of the incentive is that you're not actually guaranteed a spot. You're still hunting for a spot on street versus in a garage if you buy a monthly pass.
If you work downtown, you usually get down between 7 and 8. Right. You usually have first call of the parking meters.
Right. And you could.
Yeah. So I think this is not intending the desired effect.
Commissioner, I mean, what we struggled with was for people who tell us they work downtown to explain why they can't use TriMet and to explain that they don't have access to one of our existing garages or employer-provided parking, we wanted to put those people in no worse position than people who don't have mobility issues and can park one of our garages. Mm-hmm. So you're right. There might not be a huge incentive to park in a garage instead. Mm-hmm. We do think, based on the experience of other cities, that once you say that people have to pay something, there will be a certain number of people who conclude that they actually can take advantage of another option, that they can park in a garage that's near them, or even that they can take TriMet. We don't know what the result of this is. I mean, there's been a fair amount of discussion, is there fraud in disabled parking? And I think that there are some people who, tempted by the lure of free parking, do, for example, borrow their grandmother's placard. And people like that might be able to take transit downtown, and having to pay $170 a month will make that decision for them. There will, however, be some people who really they need to park downtown. They don't have an accessible garage, and they're willing to pay this permit fee. So this will be something of an experiment. I think that we will free up a significant number of spaces because I think that there's a significant number of people who really do have another option. But for people who don't really have another option, we didn't want to put them in a worse financial position than somebody without a mobility disability who can park in a garage.
Mm-hmm. I think as we move to implementation, we're going to need to look at our city employees because somebody in that position would go from having free parking to having to pay monthly garage fees, which is more expensive than the employer-assisted transit pass. So I think we're going to need to look at whether there's an additional something for city employees to make it fairer.
I think we could look at that, but I also have to say that I don't think that there's any way to come up with something that is going to satisfy all the concerns that we have. I think that no matter how we slice it, there's going to be somebody who thinks that there's something unfair about what we do. I think this just moves us a lot closer to fairness than what we have now.
So I guess my note of caution is I think this is going to open up sort of as big a loophole as we have right now with the disabled placards, is we're going to see all the block faces you outlined in red, Clay Street, Jefferson Street, instead of being filled with disabled placards at 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning, they're going to be filled with employee permits. And so that's really going to work counterintuitive, I think, to everything we're trying to achieve with Central City parking circulation. But I just want to—I don't want to debate it, but I'm flagging that as a concern.
Understood, Commissioner. I will say that in the other cities that have started charging for disabled parking, even when they've done something like—I think there are cities that have said you can park for twice as long as it's on the meter, which is what you thought that this might be doing. Once you have it be not free, there's a significant number of people that somehow find some other thing to do.
And Steve, what is the monthly charge?
We would have it be equivalent to a neighbor, to a garage in the area. So something like, I mean, in downtown, I think that the normal monthly fee is something like $170 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we currently do surveys to figure out lot and price, or lot and garage prices for our smart park garages. So that part of methodology wouldn't be new for the garages. But I think there's also two other parts to think about when considering, you know, how many of these permits are we actually going to see in use? How attractive are these permits? So there's two parts of it. One, as Commissioner Novick noted, there will be an application. So it will be something where you actually have to physically come to the city, fill out an application, answer questions, and kind of be and have that disabled placard valid with you. So I think there's a component of going through that effort that some people will just say, well, I might as well just go to that garage couple blocks away. The other part of the employee permit, and we've done this with past permits through PBOT, is that they're only valid for a certain geographical area. And so an employee permit would only be valid for what we're proposing right now is a 3-block radius from the work site. And so what we're saying is we're issuing you this permit so that you can park close to where you work. That's the purpose of this. And so the person isn't necessarily getting a permit that allows them to park everywhere for free in the city. And so there's still a limitation between this permit and what the disabled placards currently allow. Okay, so I'm going to move on to our last category, which is for residents of the meter district. We are proposing that there's a resident permit, which would be quite similar to the employee permit. So it'd be the same thing where they would come downtown, they would give us their address, just like if they were applying for an area parking permit. But the difference here between really APPs and this sort of permit is, one, it would once again, like the employee permit, be at a cost at or similar to neighboring lots or garages to once again incentivize using those. In an application, we would be asking them if their housing unit provides parking. And so what we're trying to do here is say, if you have parking, please use that over on street for long-term parking. And then once again, like the employee permit, we would be having a geographical limitation. And so you would just be able to park within that 3-block radius. With the resident permit, I think it's important here to note, you know, that people can fall into more than one category. So if somebody lives downtown and they use their car every day to commute to someplace, let's say they go to Beaverton every day for work, they might decide that it's cheaper for them to come back home from work, pay 1 hour on the meter every night, and just go that route instead of going for the resident permit. If, you know, they get home at 6, they just have to pay until 7, they're done for that day. And so we're kind of offering these different options for people to choose from. The second category for residents is for those in subsidized housing. As we delved into this program, we really came to note that we didn't know too much about the disabled placard users who live in subsidized housing downtown in the meter district. And we didn't want to start stepping on toes or start putting in a burden that just wasn't needed, and that also we shouldn't be doing here as a bureau or as a city. And so we've extended a window of a year. And so for those that live in subsidized housing downtown that have a placard, we would be issuing free permits that would be valid until June 30th of 2015. And what this allows us to do is figure out who is this population, where do they live, kind of what are their concerns, and give us an idea of what problem we're actually trying to solve. Because right now we just don't know who would need the accessibility at the subsidized housing residences and what sorts of accessibility they would need. So we have this year to get us in line.
Steve, when we talk about subsidized housing, are we including both buildings that are subsidized by the county, the city, or Home Forward, as well as people that have things like Section 8 vouchers and who are dispersed? So anyone that has a unit that has some kind of government subsidy would be eligible under this?
I think that that was our intent, but I don't know if we specified it.
Yeah, we did not specify it in the proposal, but I would agree that that was our intent.
So whether you're a discrete unit in a building or a building set aside that has a subsidy, and I assume you would be limiting this to people who are in housing subsidized at below 60% MFI?
I should have asked you or Commissioner Saltzman that question. I mean, is that what most of it is, or are there gradations?
Well, if you have 6 months to, since you're building in time to build this out, I think I think this would be a good question for Tracy Manning, just to define the universe with the city and the county, because particularly since you'll be monitoring this, it's both buildings and programs, but you might want to consider a cap, depending on how you want to target this.
Okay. Thank you. I wrote Tracy's name down to get in touch later. Okay. So those are the major parts of the program, and we'll welcome some questions a little bit later, but I wanted to, before I finish up and before I hand over the microphone to some of our stakeholders that have helped put together this program, talk a little bit about the next steps. So as we mentioned before, education campaign, we were hoping that we would start it after getting your comments and your approval of the program, and so that will begin in 2014. As for in-vehicle meters and permits, we're looking at April or May to start issuing those for use in July. So that April-May window just gives us enough time to get them out to folks and hopefully, you know, get that word of mouth out so that people can tell their friends and family about the different parts of the program. The next point is that the program goes into effect on July 1st, and so July 1st is when enforcement of the program would begin. In talking with our enforcement staff, the idea isn't if you have a placard on your car July 1st, you don't have your in-vehicle meter, or you're still going along with the same rules we have now, you wouldn't get the big ticket right away. We would be using that first window of enforcement time as an education period as well. And so if we pull up your license plate and it shows that you've never gotten a citation for misuse of a disabled placard under the current program, you would get a warning plus education materials. Now, if it's your third time and we've put in our notes that you've had the warnings, you have the education materials, that might be a different story. But we are looking at that first month or first couple of months to continue education as we also start the enforcement. And then the last point I think is really important and was a really important point that the Commission on Disabilities and the Task Force wanted to see, and that's a review of the program after 1 year. As Commissioner Novick stated, not many cities have put together such a holistic program, and I think we're going to be in the forefront in the nation on this program. But part of it is that we don't know how a lot of the parts will work, or if they will actually provide that accessibility. And so this review of the program over that 1 year with the task force's help will get us to the point to see whether this program is achieving the goals we were hoping for. And so we would probably be reporting back to you on this program in mid-2015 to see if there's any changes that we'd like to see, as well as hopefully that by that point we would have a better idea of what sort of program we might want to put in place for those in subsidized housing. So this is the timeline that we're looking at. And with that, unless there's any immediate questions, I was going to turn it over to some of our helpers in this.
Just on that last piece, I'm a little concerned about asking you to come back in July. If you're only going to be implementing in July, it would mean we might miss some of the data from May and June because it takes a while to compile it, analyze, and get the report back. Mm-hmm. So that's just a friendly amendment suggestion to have the report come back in August or September on the first year rather than right at the end, within 4 weeks of the end of the first year. Something to consider.
Be happy to make that change.
Yeah. Thank you. So with that, I'm going to introduce two folks that have been on the task force with us for the last 5 years. I think you both have been with us for 5 years. Nicole Chiron, who's the city's disability coordinator down at ONI, and I'm sure many of you know Nicole. And then also Lisa Frisch, who's with the Portland Business Alliance. And they both have been really instrumental in putting together this proposal and prepared a little bit of testimony to talk about kind of why the proposal makes sense for them and kind of talk about the unique parts that apply specifically to them and their stakeholders.
Nicole Chiron, I'm the disability coordinator down in ONI. So what I want to bring to your attention is a little bit about how and why this is so important. And as Sarah said, I've been involved for 5 years, and it's a long time that we've been trying to come up with something. And this has really been the first proposal that we've come up with that everybody could get on board with. And so you're going to hear, as other people talk today, about Senate Bill 716 again. And what's interesting is that SB 716 kind of pushed our hand at coming up with a solution. But the truth is, we were going to have a parking problem regardless of what the state was saying. A very unique thing happened in 2011. Every day of that year, every single day of that year, 8,000 plus baby boomers turned 65. And they are a generation that is 79 million strong. That's a quarter of the U.S. population. So why that's interesting is that statistically, when people reach the age of 65, 50% of them will have some sort of disability. And so we're seeing this large portion of our population, they're reaching an age, and that in conjunction with the fact that physicians all across the U.S. are very non-restrictive about giving out disabled placards. There aren't, especially in Oregon, when you look at that DMV application, there really isn't much to kind of hone in on who really needs it. So a lot of people are able to get these placards. And as Sarah showed you in the data, from the time we started to now, we've seen a steady increase. So this was going to be a crisis for us, regardless of if SB 716 came about. And personally, being involved the whole time, this proposal, I think, does a really, really good job of focusing on opening up accessibility versus focusing on who gets the privilege or not. But I do think that's a larger issue for the community, which isn't really what we're talking about here. What we're really talking about is how do we create turnover so that people who need the accommodation can have it. One of the things, and Commissioner Novick said, my concern was we do have people that live on fixed incomes downtown, and there's probably a handful of them that really do rely on a vehicle, and they probably don't have a wheelchair. So we really want to make sure that those people don't fall through the cracks. And I think that if we look at this proposal more as a pilot project, that we've got something that is really good, and we should put it in place, see what we learn from it, and then revisit it and come back and make those changes to make sure that we are accommodating everyone, I think this is a really good start. And I just wanted to, when you guys talked about the visitors, as someone who visits other cities, a lot of other cities have a sticker on the meter that says, here's how the disabled parking works. And we could very easily just have a phone number with a hotline they could call that would explain, because it is a little challenging. There's a lot of different aspects to it, but I think that would kind of help those visitors, because I know that that is something we have talked about and is a concern for everyone.
Hi, good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Lisa Frisch, and I'm the Retail Program Director at the Portland Business Alliance and a member of the Disabled Parking Task Force. In the nearly 6 years that the committee has met, the use of disabled placards in parts of downtown has grown from 20 to nearly 30% in some areas. On many streets downtown, including around this building, you'll see vehicles displaying placards all day, thus limiting turnover. As you know, parking availability downtown is a sore spot. For the past 6 years, lack of parking availability downtown has ranked in the top 5 factors that need improvement in our annual business census and survey. And that's a survey of all 4,500 businesses in the central city. And parking availability doesn't just affect retail business. It affects all businesses that, and services that see visitors during the day. That includes doctors, therapists, lawyers, accountants, and other professional services downtown. Downtown should be easy to navigate and easy to find parking. Parking prices should be equitable amongst all visitors. The hundreds of parking garages and lots that we have downtown should be utilized for all-day parking, leaving on-street spaces for short-term visitors. The misuse and abuse of parking placards hurts everyone, including people with disabilities that need to find nearby parking. We feel that the proposed program will address this problem by allowing people with disabilities to utilize on-street parking with generous time accommodation for up to 3 hours and additional technology available for those that need to park close to their destination for more than that time period. In addition, the dedicated, designated on-street parking to those with disabled placards will ensure access to those who need it most. Getting here has been quite the journey. I'd like to thank my fellow members of the task force, many of whom are here today, for dedicating nearly 6 years of their time to working together to find a solution to this problem. It's been a pleasure to serve on this committee. Finally, I'd like to thank Commissioner Novick for his thoughtful leadership on this issue. Thanks to the Portland Bureau of Transportation staff, we are presenting to you today a very clear and equitable solution that will provide accommodation to those who need it while working to stem abuse and misuse of parking placards downtown, ensuring everyone better access. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had one other question in light of your testimony, Lisa, to staff. What is the current penalty for fraudulently using an accessible permit?
I'm going to defer to Nolan McCurl on this one. He's our parking enforcement manager.
Nolan McCurl, PBOT parking enforcement. For a person who's unlawfully using a disabled placard, the bail for that is $720.
And what, just so since the public who's watching this might be interested in knowing, what constitutes unlawfully using?
You're using a placard that is not issued to you. We can verify that by looking at the placard and your ID or driver's license and compare the two. You're using a permit that's stolen, been replaced, or using a person's placard that has deceased.
And in rough terms, how many citations do we issue a year on that area?
In last fiscal year, we wrote 186 of those citations.
The thing is, Commissioner, it's a really difficult thing to enforce because the period of time during which people will actually be right next to their car so you can check to see if it's really their placard is a tiny fraction of the time the car is there. So unless you have an enforcement officer who happens to be there at exactly that time and has some sort of suspicion, you simply won't know. And that's, Commissioner.
No, it's just, but it's, yeah, the point is, I'm glad it's as substantial a fine as there is. I find increasingly downtown that I'm trying to calculate in my mind the number of dollars that we could charge someone for some of the stuff that I run into. You know, the person that blows by the stop sign, does a U-turn in the intersection, and is on the phone. I wish I had an app where I could just pull down how much that should cost and go knock on the window and say, yeah, you can either pay $1,000 or wise up, you know.
Commissioner, give me money.
I'll take $500 now, and we'll take $500 later. But 700.
I want to try that, though.
700 seems. I did actually try that the other day, Mayor, and I got a certain finger pointed in my face, and I just suggested the person might slow down. But it's good to know we take it so seriously that we assign a big fine. That's a substantial fine. Mm-hmm. And I would think particularly someone who's using a placard of a deceased person, we might even try to build in some extra fine for that person because that seems particularly egregious.
I think there was one instance, I can't remember frankly whether it was Portland or somewhere else, where there was a woman who used the placard of her deceased husband and she said that it made her, you know, feel closer to him, which, you know, I'm sure that's really the way she felt. I mean, one thing I think we should say is, we really don't know how much abuse there is. It's hard to even hazard a guess. There could be a lot of people who are using their grandmother's placard. There could be few. I think that what this program will do, one effect of it will be to sort that out. Because people who are using their grandmother's placard, they're not going to be able to verify to us that they qualify for an on-street monthly permit. Because in order to do that, they'd have to prove that it really is their placard. So this, I mean, Some people in the disabilities community have said to me, you're making it sound like all of us are cheating, and that's not our belief or our intent at all. We really just don't know.
Well, and to that point, Steve, I mean, we have a substantial tax abatement program in the city, and by law we're required every year to verify that people still are eligible. That's not because we believe that everybody participating is cheating. It's just that we are required to verify that there's an eligibility requirements that are met. And so one should not cast aspersions without data. So I appreciate your comment.
Great. So with that, I'm going to introduce two more